So I'm going to talk about teaching about international pharmaceutical trade and global public health policy. So I'm going to present to you why I think it's important, a little trial I did with a course on this content, and then some of the content areas. I have no relationships to disclose. And some of the objectives of what I teach and why it's important, these are the general areas. And again, this is one module added to content for family nurse practitioners, students. So their general nursing education does not include this. This is not in a textbook on pharmacotherapeutics, and they will be going off to write prescriptions. So there's very little talk about this, and I think it's important, so I wanted to address it broadly. Basically because of their future role in healthcare and to increase the importance of perhaps them being interested in this area of trade policy going forward in their careers. So that is the rationale. And basically these are the links in the content that I teach, access to healthcare, medications and safety, the pharmacoeconomics issues, the cost of medications, and the inequity in access to them across the globe, and then just broadly some public health concepts. So what is taught, this is just one module. It is delivered online. It's in the very foundation beginning of the sequence in their learning about pharmacology and pharmacotherapeutics. I present something, we discuss it, and there are some case studies. The students then go deeper in research on their own interest area. And then afterwards, I measure their impact of the learning that they have, looking for any consciousness raising that might have occurred and a future policy interest. So these are the content areas, and now I'll move into talking about each of these. And now I should just say that these are very broad, these are deep, and I find difficult some aspects of these, so I just give some examples. This is an area where there's a lot of change happening. So the first is just a global framework that there are a lot of tensions between generating wealth and promoting health. So this really goes into our policy questions, and there's no really easy middle way about this. Economies wanting to generate wealth may be doing so at the disservice of someone else's health, and even those in their own country across the world. Trade and health policy have always operated in two separate spheres, just like our education on this topic. And then global trade extends beyond these economies, well beyond them, to the global health of our world. And one of the important issues, and before Doug was talking about this and his role in this area, is just that we have the global diffusion of chronic disease. So as different economies become wealthy, they may have also the diffusion of chronic diseases such as those in our country. And chronic disease requires additional resources that may not be equitable across nations. And obviously, in secondary and tertiary public health, pharmaceuticals are the cornerstone of treatment, both of acute and chronic illness, so we do need access to these. And we know that many people across our globe do not have access to medications or safe medications, and even many people in wealthy countries do not. So it's an issue of access. So the pharmaceutical marketplace is becoming globalized, and it's a huge percentage of international trade. A huge amount of money comes from the international trade of medications. So it's a very highly valued and competitive enterprise. The countries that benefit the most are North America, Japan, and Europe. And it's really a brand name market. So only 10% of the wealth is generated from generic medications. So there's a lot of incentive to keep brand names going, patent protection, and intellectual property rights. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And drug companies often are the primary source of information when they're marketing their medications across the globe. So that gives some bias to what we use to treat people's problems with. And so just a little bit about intellectual property rights. We know that patent protection is an argument for innovation, and these are applied to medications to suggest that the creativity and innovation of this drug deserves to be protected for a period of time on a patent, and in that case can be charged at a higher cost, quite a bit higher cost. So there's a huge incentive for the market. to have brand name medications. And one of the things that I didn't know before I even started to be interested in this is it's not just one medication can have several layers of patent protection. And that can build up so that a drug can remain a brand name for a long period of time. So these are two cases. First, I'll talk about this one drug called Advair. And it's used to treat asthma and COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. There's a huge global burden of this disease, primarily through the public health issue of tobacco. So we have this increasing across our globe. And this is a very costly medication. And it's an interesting medication to give as an example because it's a medication that is held in this discus, this plastic discus, that has a patent on it that will be, that it seems to be going to be in, going on forever. It's also a combination of two drugs. So the FDA and other regulatory agencies cannot find a bioequivalent to the combination of steroids in the medication that are in a powder form. So it's a combination of medications. It's medications in a powder form. It's in this discus, and it's in a multi-dose vial, this multi-dose discus. So each of those adds a layer of patent protection. And so we don't see a future for this medication. It's the number one selling, one of the number one selling drugs across our globe in terms of profits. The next is a different example, and this is the case of insulin. And insulin is used to treat diabetes. And there's a huge global burden of that disease, also due to the diffusion of chronic illness across our globe. And there's actually a shortage of access to insulin worldwide. And regular insulin has been off of patent for a long time, but for a similar reason, there's no guideline on how to make generic biologics, which insulin is a biologic, not a pharmaceutical, but a biologic. So we're not producing regular insulin, even though there is no patent, because there is no guideline. So when you start to look at the depth of this, these types of incentives, so you could say a really big policy issue would be to develop a guideline for biologics such as insulin. And insulin is largely unaffordable, so that just leads to a higher burden of causes of what happens when a person has diabetes, which are very expensive. Interestingly, the most people dying from diabetes are in low-income and middle-income countries. So the Health Action International did a one-day snapshot in 2011, and this is an area where policy is looking at the different costs of drugs and how they vary across different countries and in different places. And they went out, and for one day, they looked at the cost of insulin and all these people, let them know how much they were paying for it. And insulin prices vary considerably between regions. So this is just one example that a 10 ml vial in Iran costs $1.50 US dollars, and in the Congo it can reach over $47 a vial. And that's a lot of difference. I don't think it's a 3,000 percentage increase, but I think it's a 300 percentage increase. So there's no real justification for that. So we see this in our own depending on how medications are purchased and by whom and whether there's a supply or demand. So very big economic issues are underpinning this that result in people's health or disease. And the next interesting topic is that of substandard medications, which is a huge emerging market, especially in countries that don't have good drug protection. So these are issues which are very widespread in developing countries, and a lot of people are looking for cheap medications. I know I see patients and they are buying things off the internet, all over the place. So these implications have to do with, infectious disease and not treating current disease and spreading other diseases. So that's a really important public health issue that we're really, it's a really emerging issue that we need to pay attention to. And finally, in terms of research, we look at the issue called the 1090 gap. So this is a little bit of a discussion about how less than 10% of the world's biomedical research and development funds are aimed at addressing the problems responsible for 90% of the global disease burden. So this is just an example of the mismatch between the needs and investments of what people need and what we're using our research dollars on in terms of the health issues. So the impact on students' learning, I think it's an important curriculum topic, linking what students will someday be prescribing locally to what the issues really are behind that, and really thinking more deeply about the global marketplace and critically thinking about their choices in some broader way, and being encouraged to think on a political and policy level. And it does foster a broader view. Students are very interested in talking about this, and I found it important to weave into their curriculum. So I probably went faster than 15 minutes, but thank you.
That's okay. We're going to have questions at the end.